Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Microsoft Teams is helping a bicycle company reinvent the way that they work.
We make low-maintenance bicycles for everyday riders. Once the pandemic hit, we had nobody coming into the showroom. So we started doing virtual visits via Microsoft Teams.
We're able to see two or threefold the amount of customers we used to be able to see. All of a sudden, we could open up our showroom to customers around the world. I really think it's going to set a standard for retail moving forward.
Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.
We are back and we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire, UFC 229. It is finally here. And unless you've been living under a rock, you know our main event is Conor, Notorious McGregor, taking on Khabib, the Eagle Nurmagomedov. But we are here to talk DFS and DraftKings. And while that fight is huge, we're here to help all of you who may be getting into DraftKings. Really, mainly because that fight is so awesome. There are 11 other fights. You're going to need to know how to approach this card. We'll break down all of them. We will also, of course, touch on that big main event, how you should approach it for DraftKings. I'm your host of Fight IQ, the Daily Fantasy Sniper, the analyst. These guys you can see in the windows below. It is Chris Olsen of RotoWire, at Real Chris Olsen, and Joe goes by Sun Tzu on Twitter. Guys, are you as excited as everybody else?
Go ahead, Chris. I always go first.
Oh, I am super excited. In fact, for this card, I ended up joining the Gamble Master competition for the fourth quarter. For anybody who doesn't know what that is,
essentially
it's like fantasy sports gambling. You have a set amount, you buy in, and then for the quarter you make bets like you would any other book, but you just make them, and whoever has the highest bankroll at the end wins the prize. So it's a good way to gamble without losing too much money, with a chance to win some. So not only do I think that'll be fun and give me a chance to win some money personally, but it'll give me more in tune with actual bets and what I'm looking at and props and all that good stuff. So yeah.
Let me tell you, dude, that is, I actually have played that before. It's just, I could not find the time, but the guy that runs that, Sart, Jerry, he does an awesome job. I mean, and he does all the programming himself. He's like one of the tout master guys, right? And yeah, he does that Gamble Master. And it updates like real-time odds from five dimes.
So you can play all the props, all the parlays.
Yeah, you could do everything. And what's really cool about it is if you really want to test out like, you know, some theory or some system or formula that you have for gambling on MMA, what a great like cost-effective way to do it, like in a simulated manner. And to your point, you could even win some money. So that's very cool. It's very cool.
Gamble Master is cool. I am looking into doing it. Probably starting next year. A little busy right now, but
yeah,
DraftKings, guys. DraftKings. This is where we're at here. Before we get started, make sure you go to RotoWire, rotowire.com/free. They have tons of usually paid content that you can check out for free for 10 days. No credit card required. season-long daily fantasy optimizers, articles, all the good stuff. Go and check it out there. They are the sponsors of this podcast, so please check them out. Also, of course, we do these live. Fridays are on 8 o'clock Eastern time. If you're watching live, thank you. Give us a thumbs up. Subscribe to the channel. Ask us any questions live. We will touch them as we go. If you're listening on the iTunes feed afterwards, Friday, 8 o'clock, follow, you know, as I said, subscribe on YouTube. You'll get notifications when we pop live, and you can ask us questions. As right now, people are asking Sun Tzu who the Chase Sherman of the week is. We will get there. You went on quite a run on Chase Sherman.
I'll last tell you, week, man. I was so lucky I didn't have to eat crow there, because I didn't know, and I don't know if this the general populace knows this, but our boy, he broke his hand, and he still finished Chase Sherman with a broken hand. So, like, you're wondering, like, he's landing a lot of shots, and this guy, you know, everybody thinks he hits pretty hard, and obviously these are heavyweights. Like, you know, why is he – well – actually, hitting Chase with all those shots was great for DraftKings, because this guy ended up, yes, you know, breaking 100 points. But, you know, I'm thinking to myself, he's hitting him. Chase has got a glass jaw. Why is he not getting finished? And then I find out after the fight, he broke his hand. So, well, I'm like, okay.
It scored well. Speaking yeah. of scoring well, let's jump into a fight that I think is going to be one of the chalky underdogs of the night. I think a lot of lineups are going to be made and or broken right off the bat. We open up the card, Ryan LaFlair, 8,800, taking on Tony Martin at 7,400. The odds on this fight, LaFlair is the favorite, but it's all the way down to minus 130. Tony Martin, huge odds value here, plus 120 if you are new, which I'm hoping we have a few new people. And stick around after you know, 229. There's DraftKings is fun all the time. But odds value is when, relative to the price of a fighter, you are getting good Vegas odds. Usually a pick'em, you know, minus 110 apiece in Vegas is about 8,100. And you can kind of, you know, scale up or down from there. So plus 120 for a guy who costs 7,400 is what we like to call really solid odds value. This fight also, by the way, is expected to go to a decision. Minus 365 over 2.5 rounds. Something you'll have to target in your cash games, your head-to-heads, really should be a solid floor for Tony Martin. Getting into the fight breakdown of it, let's start with Chris this week. Tony Martin, Ryan LaFlair, what's up?
Not much with the LaFlair camp. I mean, there's really nothing you can do. He's sort of he reminds me of like a grapple version of Sam Alvey. He just sort of, you know, stifles opponent's offense, you know. Maybe he'll get control, lay and pray victories. But I mean, yeah, he hasn't. It's funny because early in his career, he got nothing but finishes, and he's never had a finish in the UFC. So you can't rely on him for 8,800. So that's basically out the window. But I think the much more interesting thing to talk about here is Martin. I think Martin's striking looked pretty good in that Nakamura fight. I like his, he's got a good sharp 1-2. He's a good counter puncher. He likes to look for that counter uppercut, which might be interesting here because if we remember, you know, that's how LaFlair got finished by Mr. Cowboy Oliveira. So, but I'm not relying on a finish here. I do think that Tony Martin, I mean, his takedown defense isn't great, but it's improving. But also, he's very good in the scrambles. He's very good at getting sweeps. And LaFlair was, I mean, he had to really work to win those scrambles against Alex Garcia. So even if LaFlair gets some takedowns, which I expect him to get at least one or two, I don't expect Martin to be on his back for long. And what I really expect this to turn into eventually is sort of a slow-paced boxing match, which I expect Martin to win. So I'm going to go Tony Martin by decision.
I think that's the consensus train of thought here, why people are on Tony Martin. Neither one of these guys, is worth noting, typically score very well in wins. You don't need a ton from Martin at his price. But if Martin does pop back up, that's when LaFlair does score well. Early in his UFC days, he took down Howard 4 times, McGee 4 times, Ponzinibbio 5, Holloway 6. And in those fights, he scored 102, 134, 87, 105. Since then, though, it's been a bunch of crap in his wins. His last 3 wins, you know, 2 mid-60s and a mid-50. Not great. Won't get it done at 8,800. I think there's better plays in the price range. Joe, how are you attacking this?
Okay, so this is obviously one of the worst kept secrets in you know, on this slate, right? Is odds value, Tony Martin, 7.4K. Look, I'm not going to pick LaFleur here, but people have got to look at some of the narrative here. There is a strong amount of recency bias. Two things. One is Sean Shelby has come out and told Tony Martin and Ryan LaFleur that they're the two most boring fighters on the roster, right? So he said that to these guys. You guys are the two most boring fighters on the roster, okay? He looked really good, Tony Martin did, against Nakamura. I don't know that if he didn't perform as well or just kind of won a decision against Nakamura that you'd see this odds value. On the positive side, this is his second camp at American Top Team. He is, at least I hope he's rolling with his girlfriend, Harrison, the judoka who is kind of fighting on the PFL slate. So there is some narrative here. LaFleur is this kind of boring, grinding fighter. Did okay against Alex Garcia. I think I might have been on Garcia in that fight. It looks like he just gassed. So I would be careful here. You know, there's a lot of people touting Martin. I'm going to pick him here too, but just tread carefully.
Next up, look at this. Another underdog that I like. Back-to-back start the card, and then I think we get into a lot of favorites. Nick Lentz, 9,000, taking on Gray Maynard, 7,200. Nick Lentz, as you would guess by the price, obviously the favorite. Current line, minus 235, Gray Maynard, plus 215 on the comeback. Minus 290, over 2.5 rounds, another fight to go to a decision. Before I let Joe kick this one off, I want to dispel a couple of narratives you may have heard out there. You've heard that Gray Maynard is shot and has no chin. Gray Maynard could be shot. One of the ways he loses this fight is he gets chin checked. But he hasn't been knocked out in his last four fights. Ross Pearson did catch him. Not a great sign. He had three straight, losses by knockout. But since then, he's been in there with Yakovlev, Uriah Hall. That was a decision, but he lost. And Taruto Ishihara, he just wrestled you-know-what for three rounds, which is the way you can beat Nick Lentz. Nick Lentz is live to his submission, has a good grappling game, but I think Maynard is live to the takedowns here, especially at 7,200. And going back to the Maynard getting KO'd narrative I wanted to touch on, Nick Lentz has one UFC knockout. So I don't see that as being one of the likely paths to victory here. A dog that I know we're starting with back-to-back underdogs, but like I mentioned, there's not a ton in the way of dog value on this card in my mind. So I like Gray Maynard. Joe, how do you have this fight?
Stylistically, this is a pretty good matchup for Maynard. Pretty decent, matchmaking if you want to give the old warhorse a shot at a legitimate win here. I don't understand.
They're both old warhorses.
Yeah, I don't understand the opening odds on this. Someone, I think, blew it. But, the only time that Maynard was ever submitted, ever, was in an exhibition bout, and he was submitted by the great Nate Diaz in an exhibition bout. Yes, he's been knocked out, but I don't see Lentz as that knockout kind of guy. I mean, Will Brooks was just beating the ever-loving crap out of him, and then from his back, I believe it was from his back, he locked in a choke. I don't see Maynard is so much better a wrestler here. I believe he's a D1 wrestler. They might both be D1 wrestlers. I'm not sure. We'll have to check that, but I just think Maynard is not going to fall into that guillotine while he has Lentz on his back. And I don't think Lentz has that distinct a standing advantage here where he's going to, test Maynard's chin. Maybe he wins an ugly decision, but I certainly don't like the value on Lentz at that price. And I think Maynard makes a live dog. So my selection is Maynard.
So somebody in chat called me. I typed it, but I said Uriah Hall. I meant to say Ryan Hall. I don't know. That was a close slip of the tongue. Anyway, what do you got for this fight, Chris?
Yeah, I actually really, really like Maynard here. Nick Lentz is a guy who basically, if you look at his takedown defense, it's something like 42% or something, and that's because he lets you take him down because he wants to grab that guillotine. The only problem is, for as much as he loves it and always tries it, I think he has like two in the UFC, and one of them was Will Brooks. So I'm really not worried about that. And as Joe said, Gray Maynard's never been submitted. He's been in there with some pretty good jiu-jitsu players. So I'm really not worried about that at all. Nick Lentz has more of like a pressing forward, meat and potatoes boxing style than Maynard does, but he also tends to chase his opponents around the cage. So like a counter shot to hurt Lentz here, I don't think is out of the question. And I don't think that Lentz, like I can really see the an issue where like his spacing isn't good and he's chasing Maynard around and Maynard gets takedowns that way. So yeah, I don't really see. I mean, I guess Lentz could box him up for a decision, but I see Maynard getting takedowns in this fight, and I see a really clear window for him to win that way. Lentz has lost that way in the UFC before, maybe to a better grappler than Ray Maynard, you might say, but the window is there, and I'm going to be on Maynard a lot here.
All right, next up, a fight that I'm actually really, really excited for DFS-wise, and I think it'll surprise a lot of people. Yana Kunitskaya, 8,500, taking on Lena Landsberg, 7,700. Kunitskaya is the favorite in this one. I believe this is one of the lines that's been climbing. Five times minus 210 right now. Comeback on Landsberg, plus 190. Look, Kunitskaya, this is, you know, coming off both of them lost to Cyborg, right? I think we've heard that a bunch of times.
Yeah.
But Kunitskaya, I think, she's the prospect. Landsberg's been around for a while. They both have a similar fighting style in that they'll decent volume, throw in the clinch. They both are actually really good in the clinch. I think Kunitskaya is better. I also think she's stronger, and if she wants, could get takedowns here. I think Kunitskaya, I'm much higher on her than I am of Landsberg. I know what Landsberg is. I think I have a decent decent eye on what Kunitskaya could be. So she's my pick in this one. Chris, how do you have this fight?
Yeah, I agree. And I'll go a step further. This is one of my gamble master plays. My first one actually is that TKO prop for Kunitskaya is like plus 500. Like if you looked at just the last three fights for Kunitskaya, you might get the impression that she's just like a grappler, but she's actually, I mean, and she was on the regional scene, a pretty ferocious kickboxer. She's got nine of her wins, or seven of her wins are KO TKOs. She likes to press forward. She's got a good kicking game. She throws in combination. I think the grappling, especially with Cyborg, might have been a matchup choice. And, you know, she did that in her last couple Invicta fights too. But even if she does want to grapple here, we saw what happens when Landsberg goes to the ground in the Aspen Lab fight. And I agree with you, Sean, and I think this is a major point, that all Landsberg wants to do, literally, is put you up against the cage and land knees. And I think Kunitskaya is going to be stronger there. We saw her be strong there against Cyborg. We saw her strong there against Tanya Evinger. So I think she's going to be plenty strong there, at least to get a separation if she wants. I think she can get takedowns if she wants. She's not a great grappler, but she's a willing one. And Lena Landsberg isn't any kind of grappler. So, yeah, I actually see a finish for Kunitskaya here. And I also think it can be an under-the-radar play.
If you are new to this podcast and new to MMA DFS Twitter, you should know that Joe is the not self-proclaimed. We've all crowned
him. No, I have not proclaimed myself.
We have crowned him the king of women's MMA. He has a really good read on it. He watches chess as much as anybody else. I'll watch the main card of Invicta. Joe will watch the whole damn card.
I watch all Invicta.
So, Joe, what do you have for Kunitskaya Landsberg?
Okay, I wish I could give everybody a hot take on this fight, but I really don't have one, because I see Landsberg as a five-minute fighter, and she will have to win and do all her damage via a tie clinch up against the cage. To Chris's point, Yana is pretty strong. I am not as confident as a finish, although I certainly think it can happen, because I think Yana is going to keep it standing. I mean, opportunistically, maybe she'll take it down, but I think she's happy striking. So I do like Yana in this fight. Again, it's not a huge hot take. I have some, you know, set for later on, but I do like Yana here. I think if Landsberg, you should probably have one or two shares of her if you're playing mass entry and you know, maybe one share of her, because if she gets it done, if she wins, I see her winning in the first 5 minutes, because that seems to be where she expends the lion's share of her energy. So if she catches Yana with an elbow or something, anything could happen relative to that. These are women's fights. You know, Yana took some damage in one of her fights. So it's not unprecedented, but I do like Yana here fairly significantly.
And you know what? We get another women's fight to talk about right off the back of it. Aspen Ladd, 8,200, taking on Tanya Evinger, who is at 8,000. The odds on this fight, Aspen Ladd has odds value, minus 165. Tanya Evinger, plus 155. I haven't been on my computer checking odds today. Not, doesn't look like there's been any big drop, but Aspen Ladd did not look good away. And
oh, my God, she looked horrible.
Shaking, had trouble standing up. People I've talked to are totally dismissing it, saying, ah, she'll be fine. Listen, that affects you guys. 30 hours is not enough. I'm not saying flip and go. Like, I'll tell you how it's affected me. I was probably going to straight fade Tanya Evinger. I don't think I can quite do that anymore. I haven't made up my mind for sure yet, but there's definitely some risk there, especially being that dehydrated affects your chin. It just, your whole body's more apt to shut down. It's just, we've seen it before. It's not a guarantee. Ladd is young. Her body could bounce back. She is just big for this weight class, and she's going to be bigger than Tanya Evinger, who has a mom bod. She is a tough old lady, and is talented. I don't want to, sometimes you hear soccer mom and it's an insult, but she looks like it, but she can fight. She is a grizzled vet, was the Invicta champion for a while. The problem is that these two have pretty similar styles. And I think Ladd is just obviously younger and a little better, a little more explosive when it comes to it. So I still want to take Aspen Ladd. I think this is a close fight that goes to a decision, and I probably wasn't going to have a ton of it until now. I got to figure out what I want to do with this weight cutting issue, because maybe now Ladd knows she doesn't have that much gas in the tank and she's going to try and get a finish. Joe, overall breakdown of the fight, plus your thoughts on this weight cutting.
Okay, so full disclosure, I have Tanya Evinger in an open-ended parlay with Jan Błachowicz. So I liked when I first saw the line put up for this fight and it was relatively even. I thought to myself, I'm getting the former Invicta champion at even. I'm gonna take this now. Obviously, in hindsight, I should have waited and maybe not done the parlay. I'm really surprised. Look, I love Aspen Ladd. I've watched every one of her fights. I touted her as a prospect. I think being young actually works against her. I mean, she was a 125er, and she's had problems making 135, which means she's growing. Now, she looks shredded in some of her pictures, but looking shredded and being able to eat properly and cut weight are two completely different ways of training. So the fact that she looks so bad, and I even when she was doing the presser, the interviews where, you know, you stand under your name and the press comes up to you, I had never seen her look that hot. Like, I was like, okay, wow. Like, she lost her baby fat, but she must just be putting on muscle and packing muscle in, because if a former 125er is having this much trouble making 135.
Anthony Pettis, the former featherweight champion, it took him a while to make lightweight today.
Yeah, I mean, you know, exactly. They needed to use the towel. So I'm thinking to myself, I'm feeling a lot better about my Evinger play. I would really be cautious of the odds value here, because maybe to your point, Sean, it'll push Aspen Ladd to get something done. But my pick to win the fight is Tanya Evinger. She's fought much better competition. She has some great victories. Unfortunately, the only thing that Evinger seems to really be known for is the fact that after winning Invicta, she threw up in the bucket in her corner and then, you know, went out and put a full lip lock on Lorisenko, which, look, I can't blame her for that, but it was like terrifying to watch that. But my pick is Tanya Evinger.
Chris?
Yeah, I was a little surprised when I saw this line, just because I think that I think that Tanya is probably at least the more experienced grappler. I think she's probably the better MMA grappler. And I think that Aspen Ladd, I like her come forward, like her pressure striking style. But and Evinger holds her hands really low and she's really got an open guard. So that could be a problem. And I thought about that. But at the end of the day, I don't see a scenario where Ebinger doesn't get her hands on Ladd. And I think when that happens, it's basically going to be Ebinger's world. And
Ladd is so damn strong.
I don't know, man. I was thinking about that too. Ebinger was you know, was holding her own with Cyborg in the clinch. She's too.
Crafty. She is crafty. She took Cyborg down. Yeah. One of two people.
She's crafty and more and has more technique. I think physical strength goes to Ladd.
Oh, we'll see.
Maybe a little bit. I don't think that's going to be like an overwhelming thing in any case. But I just don't know. Like I just have this recurring picture in my head of Ebinger getting this fight to the floor and working her top game. And so, yeah, my pick is Ebinger, possibly by submission.
There's more people are on Ebinger. Maybe I'm going to stick with my Ladd exposure. I feel decent about it. Moving on a fight. All right, guys, if you want to go on and on about McGregor and Khabib, let's move past this one quickly. Vicente Luque, 9,400, taking on Jalen Turner, 6,800. Luque's a -825 favorite. Turner took this fight on short notice, and he is facing, in my opinion, one of the most underrated guys in this division. Vicente Luque is a killer. Like, his only loss, I believe, is to Leon Edwards, who's top 10, top 15.
At least top 10, maybe top 5. 10.
Yeah, right there. Nico Price submitting him, on short notice was impressive. Hits hard. Good submissions. This guy that I just think is really underrated. Vicente Luque, if you can fit him in your lineups, I say go for it. Unless Jalen Turner pulls an Alex Hernandez on us, I mean, this one should be the slam dunk of the card, but it's MMA. Chris, what do you got?
Yeah, if you watched Jalen Turner's looking for a fight, he should have had his opponent out of there like three times. But what happens is he held his hand so low that he was eating every single hook that his opponent threw. And so he almost got himself knocked out. He had to panic wrestle at least once in that fight. And a guy as athletic and crafty as Vicente Luque, he's just not going to give you that many opportunities if you let him hang around. I think he's got the length and the attributes to hurt pretty much anybody. He's got good straight punches, but he just gets tagged too much. And we saw Luque get that counterhook knockout on who was that? Chad Laprise. So I just think he's got way too many tools. He's just going to be too seasoned, and he's going to be, for a guy, frankly, I think in Jalen, who's too reckless, and I think he's going to get him knocked out.
Joe?
Well, okay, so horrible matchmaking. I don't understand it at all. Why not give Luque someone, not with a little bit more experience? Also, Turner is a natural lightweight.
This is short notice. It was Bilal Muhammad fell off the card, I think.
Yeah, but still, though, dude, it's horrible matchmaking. Turner's a natural light. He's a lightweight in the James Vick mold. He's moving up to welterweight. Look, Michael Bisping, I believe he's one of Bisping's main sparring partners, or was. They all say good things about him, but he's the people he beat. He's crushed a lot of cans. With that said, he's got nothing to lose. If there's anybody who should be looser on this entire card, he should be the loosest fighter. For that reason, I've got two lineups out of my 150 with Jalen Turner in it. Because if he wins, he's probably going to be on the optimal lineup.
Yep.
Right? So if you're going to, if you're playing 10 lineups, it's perfectly fine to fade him. Luque, on the other hand, to earn his salary, to get you the 11 to 12 X that you need for GPPs, he's going to have to either get a first round finish with some takedowns and some grappling points, or he's going to have to, just do a lot of striking and get a second round finish. If this goes to decision, or if somehow this fight makes it to the third round, Luque is not going to earn salary. So be very careful, but I do see him as pretty much a cash lock.
All right, moving on. Felice Herrig, 8,300. Oh, wait, I skipped a fight. Excuse me.
Did.
And I don't know why I skipped this fight. This is one of my favorite spots in the card, and I think me and Chris are going to go at it here. I think we are. Sergio Pettis, 8,600, taking on Jussie Formiga, 7,600. Line on this fight, Sergio Pettis. believe, is, in my mind, inexplicably the favorite at minus 150, taking on Formiga at plus 140. I can't explain why Pettis is the favorite here. It's because his last name is Pettis. Look, I know he beat Joe Benavidez. That was a close fight. Lost to Cejudo. Should have learned some things in that fight, but showed he had a hard time with the takedown. Although he did stop a few, if I remember right. Five-round decision winning against Brandon Moreno. It's Brandon Moreno, guys. Another guy who I think was brought up too quick. This is, in my mind, just too much, too fast. Jusce Formiga, he loses to guys like Ray Borg, Henry Cejudo as well, and Joe Benavidez. But he beats, you know, that win over Wilson Hayes was really impressive to me. Now, his last couple, Ben Wen, Oka Sasaki, okay wins. I mean, Sasaki, not really, but Ben Wen's a solid win. He had a knockdown in that fight. Well, this is a flyaway fight that I think is going to hit the ground. I think Formiga has a big advantage down there. At 7,600, a guy is going to look to grapple, who I think is up against an overhyped opponent. I like Jusce Formiga quite a bit in this matchup. And I just assume that Chris is on Little Pettis.
Defer to Chris because I want to do the next fight first. So let Chris go.
All right, Chris. Go ahead.
I think it was me anyway. And you have assumed correctly, sir. Yeah.
Of course, you love Pettis. His last name's Pettis.
Get
in your bedroom.
Pettis and Alexio Linick all day long. But I do like Sergio Pettis quite a bit, and that's Joseph Benavidez win. He showed you why in the first round. He has got some really sharp counter punching. Like it's sharp and it's crisp and it's hard. He hurt Benavidez multiple times in that fight, and I think Jusce Formiga's striking is going to leave some similar holes. And I expect Sergio Pettis to crack Formiga with something hard on the counter as he's coming in. On top of that, I mean, yeah, he lost to Henry Cejudo in a grapple fest. But, you know, Formiga doesn't look for takedowns with that kind of frequency. So if Pettis can stuff one or two, maybe, you know, get the thought out of Formiga's head, maybe he tries to stand a bit more. And if that happens,
if he stops them, I'll give you say if I don't think he will, but we can disagree. I don't. Formiga's not going to stop. Formiga's going to keep shooting until he gets knocked out. If that were to happen,
well, you just said he stopped a couple of early Cejudo shots. So I mean,
Cejudo didn't stop though. Formiga's not going to stop. If you're going to say that Pettis has takedown defense, he's going to keep improving. I can see the line of thought. I don't think it's going to become a stand up fight. Formiga is either going to get this to the ground or go out on that sword, I think.
Well, I think it's option two because I just think his striking is going to leave too many opportunities, and I think he likes to stand more than you think he does. I think we disagree on that. I think I think he's a guy who feels like his striking is improving, and it is, but you know, it's still a work in progress. So I think he's going to give Pettis a lot more standing opportunity than he should, and I think it's gonna lead to a Pettis win.
Joe, what do you got?
Well, I partially agree with Chris that if this does turn into a striking affair, and even from a DraftKings perspective, Formiga is not a high volume striker. However, with that said, he's the lead on the ground. I have doubts in my mind that Pettis even won that fight against Joe B. I'm not sure. I mean, I think that was close enough, you know, that either one of those guys could have won that fight. However, 7.6K, chance of a submission. I like Jusce here. I would just caution people that if it does go to a decision, you better hope he has some grappling points because you're not going to get any points for significant strikes if he wins a decision.
Do you prefer Formiga or Martin?
There's obviously some price savings on Martin at 7.4. I think that Formiga's got a better chance to win.
No one even asked Chris because we know his answer there. All right. You know, I'm getting a little stuck in chat because you guys might want to search your Twitter. We'll talk about it in two fights, but a little tease. Actually, everybody else watching already knows. You guys, while the other one's talking, you might want to go on Twitter and just search Volkov Lewis. Little bit of weigh-in fireworks that we'll have to talk about.
Okay.
Felice Herrig, 8,300, taking on Michelle Waterson at 7,900. Felice Herrig, -115.
Ah.
Michelle, the karate hottie Waterson, +105. If this was a looks competition, I actually think Felice Herrig is kind of cute, but that's because I'm into athletic chicks. But, yeah, Michelle Waterson would win that competition in a first-round knockout. Holy Christ. That being said, this is a mixed martial arts fight. I'm taking Felice Herrig in the RotoWire staff picks. Everyone except Joe took Felice Herrig. He'll tell you why he's on Waterson. For me, I think Herrig is going to be able to do her bulldog thing here, clinch fighting. I know Waterson has underrated grappling. I just think Herrig is going to be too strong in this matchup. I'm not sure how well it scores. I think it's going to be kind of a grindy type of fight, similar to the Kovalkiewicz fight she just lost, where, you know, that was a good performance from Herrig. I think it looks like that, but I think she gets the win here and muscles the undersized Waterson around. That being said, Joe, you wanted to go first here.
Dude, you can't lob me softballs by saying Joe's on Waterson. Yep. Like I
was going to say, you said on Twitter that you were on an island with her, and I replied,
you said I were on an island. Yeah, you can't give me softballs like that. So
do I.
Yeah, so I like my inside the distance prop with Waterson. I like the fact that – now, I said my inside the distance prop. I didn't say the fight inside the distance prop. My inside the distance prop is probably like -1,000. But anyway, a lot is being made of this size advantage, right? Okay, go to Tapology. We're talking Felice Herrig 5'4", Michelle Waterson 5'3". Okay, we're talking 1 inch. So, like, I don't.
She's bigger, Joe.
Michelle Waterson has actually showed some muscles in her past few fights. She's been working out. Look, I love Jackson Wang. Felice Herrig has been money. I've done real well with her, you know, in DraftKings, and you know, she's been money. I like both these fighters. I just think that, look, she's shown Michelle Waterson that she can handle a bigger, rangier fighter in Casey. Now, I know that was a hotly debated decision. I was on Waterson. I was probably alone on an island there too, thinking that she won that fight. I know a lot of people scored it for Casey. You know, same thing with Herrig, split decision win over Casey. I think this is going to be an interesting fight. I mean, I don't know. I just don't know that, you know, it's going to be a great fight to target for DraftKings. I think you should probably have a small amount of exposure. However, you never know with some of these fights. Look, I like Waterson's submission game a lot. Now, it was a different time, so I will give Herrig the fact that Michelle just totally dominated Paige VanZant and Felice actually lost to Paige VanZant. I would not make a lot of that because both fighters were in different places at the time. You know, Felice has definitely improved. But I don't know. I just don't see where she has a lot of advantage. And I think the whole strength and physicality argument is way overblown. So I'm going to take the dog here. And by that, I mean in odds, not in looks. And I am going to take, and again, my inside the distance prop is -1,000. I'm going to take Michelle Waterson, the karate hottie.
Will in chat, something that could totally happen, and we see women's MMA, he goes, mark it down, Waterson goes for head and arm throw, Felice takes her back and chokes her out.
Could happen.
Could we get the head and arm throw out of women's MMA, please?
It's not going to happen. As long as someone has the strength to do it, they're going to do it.
Yeah, I suppose. Anyway, Chris, what do you have for this
one? Well, I mean, we got to take Joe's with a grain. I mean, he's clearly smitten him, so I don't know.
He's clearly smitten.
How much we can put it. Look, I thought she clearly lost that Courtney Casey fight. I mean, she was – here's the thing. Like, you would think a smaller fighter like that, she would use her speed. And she did that in the Casey fight for about the first minute and then got flat-footed and got cracked really hard. And then got her takedown games going, but then she was fighting off submissions the whole fight. I mean, I don't really see where she won. I think that you know, Herrig is clearly stronger. I mean, she might not be that much bigger as far as height goes, but I mean, I don't think there's any question that she's going to be stronger in the clinch. I think, you know, she's actually got a good counter boxing game. We saw that in the Kovacevic fight. You know, and I don't like Waterson's game. I guess I have to declare that as
I think you're going to be surprised by her spike by Waterson's strength. I think you will be.
She did get takedowns, as I said, but I don't see her, you know, really performing on the ground at all. I think Herrick has some wins by submission, so you know.
So your pick is Herrick.
My pick is emphatically Herrick, and I think I don't like Waterston as a fighter as much as you like her as a fighter. So, you know, I just have to say that.
One thing I'm going to add one thing and then we'll let this fight go. There's this guy out there. He's not very prolific on Twitter, but he goes by the handle Mr. Arkansas. And he did a brilliant breakdown of this fight. I mean, like a pictorial breakdown with music. I mean, like if you don't want to watch, I mean, there's some value in watching his entire pod, but if you just go and like watch the breakdown on the Waterson-Herrick fight, it's brilliant. So I would recommend that.
All right, next up, Alexander Volkov, 8,700, taking on Derek the Black Beast Lewis at 7,500. These two came to sort of blows at weigh-ins just now. Lewis knocked the hat off Volkov's head. Volkov went to throw a punch, kind of thought better of it, and threw his weak arm kind of strike, and it landed a little, but everyone said came to blows. I saw the video. There was some contact there. Definitely not great. We've seen worse probably. So these two, and Lewis says he's going to throw everything away in the first round. Does not want a repeat of that Ngannou fight. That was one of the worst heavyweight fights you'll ever see. Volkov's the guy who is on a roll, 4 straight in the UFC. Before he was in Bellator, he had some losses in Bellator. So it's not like he's always been a killer. But he's 30-6 overall. Wins over Fabricio Verdum, Stefan Struve, Roy Nelson, Tim Johnson. That's a good list to have wins over. Derek Lewis has back issues. You never know who's going to show up. To me, this is actually a really interesting and close fight. Volkov, though, I think Lewis was going to gas. That was my thought coming in. I think he's going to outvolume him, get Lewis tired, get a late finish. But, of course, heavyweight fight, live to the large knockout. I'm still going to go with Alexander Volkov. You know, if Volkov was able to deal with the ground game of Fabricio Verdum, Lewis brings a different level of savage ground and pound. But I'm taking the Russian here. It's not a super confident pick, though, but I'll take Volkov. Chris?
Yeah, I'm actually fairly surprised that they gave Lewis another, prominent fight here on a main card like this. I just can't trust that Lewis's back issues are cleared up. I know he said he's working with, Tiger Woods' doctor, and his back feels better now, but we've heard this from him before. He's got two fights in the UFC that he didn't lose that Ngannou fight, but, you know, maybe he should have if Ngannou wanted to fight. But he's got two fights that were directly affected by his back issue that we know of. I think Shamil Abdulrakhimov is a third, where he basically did nothing the entire fight, threw little leg kicks, got taken down over and over, and finally was able to bulldoze him, get him to the ground, and finish. I think that when they get in the cage, he might feel fine now. Let's see how he feels when he's got to take evasive maneuver and somebody's sticking a jab in his face, which I think Volkov is going to do. I think Volkov is going to use his range very well here. We saw Lewis have trouble with range in the Mr. Rousey fight. What is this? Travis Brown fight? Travis Brown fight. If Brown, had any sense of staying on him, he probably could have finished him in that fight. This would have been a tough style matchup for Lewis anyway. But the back injury, I just can't get past it. So I'm going Volkov emphatically here.
There's a whole debate going in chat about Mr. Arkansas, good, bad, or indifferent. Lewis is going to come out quick early. He's pretty much said that talking to Brandon Parker. I also saw somebody post on Twitter that scuffle had more strikes than the entire Ngannou-Lewis fight. That being said,
the winner of the chat, right? Yeah.
What are you doing for this fight in terms of DFS?
Okay, so look, I mean, Lewis is If Volkov is fights this smart, he should easily win this. And by smart, I mean jab, 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 takedown, grind. Lewis gasses out, maybe gets a second, third round finish by Volkov. Do not trade with this guy. That is a big mistake. Do not just trade or wildly trade blows because, you know, he still has power. He can get caught with something. Very impressed with the way Volkov has been fighting. Very impressed with the Verdum fight. I heard a rumor that they actually wanted Volkov and Lewis to headline the Moscow card as opposed to Olenek Hunt, but Lewis does not like to fly apparently, so he did not really want to make that trip to Russia. It would have been interesting. But anyway, my pick is Volkov. I am just uncertain as to how solid a DraftKings play he'll be. I'm not really sure simply because I don't know how he's going to score, and I don't know when or if he's going to get a finish. So I like Volkov. This might be a better fight to bet than for DraftKings, but my pick is Volkov.
All right, moving on. We have three fights left. Young prospect here, Dominic Reyes, 8,900, taking on Ovince St. Peru, 7,300. Big line here for the youngster. Three UFC fights. Three first-round finishes. Biggest step up here. For me, though, I don't want any of Ovince St. Peru. He doesn't have a high output. His two wins he's got by submission are where he scores well. Reyes seems to be decent on the ground, long, lanky, explosive guy. I think best case for Ovince St. Peru is that Dominic Reyes gasses. I think Reyes is the real deal, will be better at range. I know St. Peru likes to sit back. I think he'll win the first couple rounds, gain some confidence. The thing is, St. Peru has been in there with killers. He's lost, though. Decision of John Jones, knocked up a Jimmy Manoa, decision of Volkan Ozdemir. His wins are Corey Anderson, a fight he lost the first two rounds of. Yushin Okami, which is a different weight class, and that fight was fixed. I have no hesitation about saying that. That was a fixed fight if I've ever seen one in my life. Marcos Rogério de Lima and somebody, his name I don't even know, top of my head, Falhao, I'm going through the logs. I watch a lot of MMA and I don't remember who that is. All that being said, I think Reyes is the real deal. I am hesitant with the price. It's a large price tag and he is still a bit of an unknown at 8,900, but I think he's a good tournament option. Joe?
Yeah, so I think it looks like OSP or the UFC is settling OSP into this gatekeeper role. If Tyson Pedro didn't have, the worst fight IQ, of the Pan Pacific region, he should have won that fight standing. Instead, I don't know what he was thinking. Anyway, I won't get into it. That should have been a loss. But OSP seems to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. So for that reason, I'd probably have a few shares of him in GPPs. I don't like this fight all that much in cash just because of the unknown. But I do think that Reyes is a decent GPP option to get a finish. But I would, in case, OSP pulls off another miracle, have a few shares of him at, 7.5K, relatively cheap price. So, or 7.3K. Relatively cheap price, so I would think about that. And my pick is Reyes.
Chris, what do you got?
Yeah, I don't know if you all remember, but I picked OSP in that Pedro fight, and my reasoning was that it's OSP, and something weird is going to happen because that's
a hard way for me to try and make money. But I guess.
I agree, except in the case of OSP, because to Joe's point, he just finds a way to win these fights. And at light heavyweight, if you're a big athletic guy and you can hang around, you're going to get your chances in most fights. I mean, it sounds simplistic, but I mean, that's just the state of the division right now. A guy like Alex Reyes, I love him. I think he's toolsy. He's athletic. He's defensively sound. He's got a good kicking game. He's good on the ground, all that stuff. We know that OSP backs himself up. That's how he got finished by Manoa. He was having a hard time with kicking game of Marco Rogério de Lima in that first round. until he blitzed a takedown, which he could do again. My only concern here, and Sean alluded to it, and I mentioned it on Twitter, is this is the best guy he's fought by far. Like, it's not even close. Like, he beat who? The guy, Jeremy Kimball. And I like Jared Cannonier. Like him a little bit less as I've seen him more and more. I think his boxing's actually regressing, but that's a different story. So I do like him, but I don't know, man. Like, what happens if, you know, if Reyes hits him and he just doesn't go away, as he tends to hang around, and he hangs around, and so what happens then? You know, I just don't. There's part of me that doesn't know if this is a test that Reyes is ready for, but just on the skill and on paper, I have to go with Reyes. I think either way, this fight doesn't go to a decision. So if you want to be sneaky on DraftKings, I would have a few shares of OSP because I honestly don't see this fight getting to a decision. But
yeah, the pick is one and a half. It's under 1.5 rounds, like -160.
Wow.
Yeah. It's
a GPP fight.
Yep.
All right. Co-main event of the evening: Tony Master Splinter Ferguson, 9,300. That's sort of reference to his rambling press conference the other day, if you didn't watch it. Taking on Anthony Showtime Pettis at 6,900. I assume that Chris is all in on Showtime because it's Showtime. Ferguson.
He's not that dumb.
Ferguson is the favorite in this fight, at -335. Pettis +305. I will say I have some concerns because Tony Ferguson is coming off of a knee injury in just 5 months. He should still be out. That being said, he's on a 10-fight win streak. And some names in that list: Abel Trujillo, Gleison Tibau, Edson Barbosa, Rafael Dos Anjos, Kevin Lee. And a lot of those fights, he's scoring 100 points. Needs it here. Showtime, though, is an interesting matchup in that Showtime's got that flashy style on the feet. We've seen it before. Both, it's a weird fight in that Ferguson, outside the personalities, they remind me a little bit of each other if they were in different weight classes, and they used to be in different weight classes. Ferguson, the bigger guy, on the better roll. Pettis looking for a resurgence now at 155. If it wasn't for this knee injury, I'd probably be all in on Tony Ferguson, but I'm pumping the brakes just a little bit. I do think Ferguson's better. I think while Pettis is slick on the ground, I do think Ferguson's better. I don't know it by a wide margin. I just think he's better there. So give me Tony Ferguson, but I might be underweight to the field in this one. And because that knee injury, God, I'm going to have a few shares of Pettis. There's no way I can full fade Pettis. And I play 20 lineups. So you're playing 5. I still might have 1 just to purely punt. And I think it's a different type of play. But if I play 1 Pettis, I'm probably playing 2 Ferguson. So take that for what you will. Joe, you start us off for this fight.
Okay, so if you've seen videos of Tony Ferguson's workouts,
he's a moron.
There's no way that you could do the kind of workouts he does and be impaired in any way. So I'm a little less concerned about the knee injury than others, just because of the workout footage that I've seen on him. I'm not ready to hand the reins over to Anthony Pettis and say that, you know, that he's in the midst of a career resurgence based on 1 win against a depleted Sick Jitsu fighter in Michael Chiesa, who immediately moved up to welterweight. Yes, it was impressive. It was a nice win. I'm not ready to say that he's in the midst of a career resurgence over that 1 win. I like Tony quite a bit here. I think he's pretty close to a cash game lock. GPPs, I don't know. He does throw a lot of significant strikes. He could throw 150 strikes in a 3-round decision win, which would get you 75 points. He's just better everywhere than Pettis. He's better standing. He's a better grappler. He's a better wrestler. He's better defensively. He's got a better submission game. There's not one area of MMA at this point in their respective careers where Pettis has an advantage. And, you know, the knee narrative, I get it if you want to be cautious. But from pure MMA perspective, I love Tony Ferguson here.
Chris, what do you got for this fight?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things to like about Anthony Pettis here. Number one is the knee injury, which you guys have said. And look, it might look all well and good when he's doing controlled stuff like working out or you know, everybody's just talking about, oh, he's doing spins at the workout and stuff.
Nothing's controlled about Tony Ferguson's workouts, dude.
Well, no, but for him, that's how he does it. So let's see what it looks like when he gets kicked in it a couple of times. You know, the other thing about him is, look, it can't be ignored when you're talking about Tony Ferguson. The guy gets hurt badly in every single fight. He got hurt badly in the Barboza fight. He got hurt badly in the what's his name fight? The Lando Venata fight. Thank you. He got hurt badly in the Kevin Lee fight. He got mounted and was taking shots at the end of round one. This is a guy who always puts himself in danger in round one. And look, Pettis is a guy who he said, look, this is a resurgence. I'm gonna be the striker again. I'm gonna be the come forward guy. And if he does that, and look, what I think Ferguson probably needs to do here is probably fight the way he fought Barboza, where he just blitzed out. And I think that was a good style. But we actually saw some good counter boxing from Barboza in that fight, which was surprising and also was the reason why he didn't have as much success. But I just that knee injury is, I mean, he's not coming back like a month. It's more than like a half a year that he was supposed to be out and he's back here. And I just don't know, similar to Derek Lewis, you know, I just don't know what it's going to look like in battle mode, you know? So I think having some shares of Pettis is a good strategy. I mean, I think he's way liver than the line is to win this fight. For the reason of the injury, compounded by the fact that, you know, he has those rough first rounds. And eventually, you know, when you do that, you know, you can only hang on for so long. Eventually, one of those guys is going to put you away. So I would say be a little careful about Ferguson here.
You're getting some heat. Excuse me. Some heat in the chat.
Chris,
that he wasn't hurt by RDA. He walked through everything for five rounds.
I didn't say RDA. RDA, in fact.
You said RDA you did, was you probably. Did say, you did say every
you
fight.
You did say he was hurt in every fight.
Okay. A little bit of hyperbole, guys. Come on.
Okay.
I'm just saying. And somebody asked, is he, because cash lock, I think it's a different conversation, cash lock over Luque. No, Luque is the better cash play.
I would agree, yeah.
And I do
agree. There are ways you could get both guys in your cash lineup.
Somebody mentioned that, and I agree with the sentiment that if O'Malley Quiñones didn't get scrapped, I would have had both. But that's not the case. Not the world we live in. So let's get to our main event. Guys, who's our main event? Anybody know?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one.
Habib, the Eagle, Nurmagomedov, 8,400, taking on the notorious Conor McGregor at 7,800. I haven't looked at the line on this fight in a while because I'm not betting it. Minus 175 for Habib. Wow. Plus 165 for Conor. Look, everybody knows the fight breakdown in this. We are here for DraftKings. So I'm going to be clear. We all know the fight breakdown. Conor McGregor has to catch Habib coming in, knock him out. Habib, if he gets his arms around Conor, gets him to the ground, it's probably a wrap. You can debate whether or not Conor can stop a takedown and get back up. They have to reset after round one. I think we all know the fight breakdown. We all know a striker versus grappler. So before we go into DFS, we'll at least give our picks on the fight. That being in mind, let's not add anything to the fight breakdown. Everybody knows it, and quite frankly, as much as I love MMA, I'm sick to death of talking about it. So I'm picking Habib. Joe, who are you picking for this fight?
Anybody know what's a mile long and has an IQ of 40? The St. Patrick's Day Parade. I am very bitter, as you know, about Conor, simply because I paid up for a huge VIP package for the Barclays card, and Conor totally decimated it.
Yep.
So I don't see any way I could back the redheaded chicken here. My pick is Khabib.
Chris, just pick here. Who are you picking for this fight? Habib?
I can't talk about the fight at all.
We're going to go back to that.
We'll go back to it if you want to give a little bit. But please, I mean, I'm so sick of the breakdown.
Yeah, there's enough out there.
We all know it.
Yeah,
Habib's awesome insight, guys.
Habib's got to get takedowns. He's got to win the round. Conor's going to win early. Khabib could. I mean, it's all kind of.
Do you have anything different to say? In all seriousness, do you have anything?
Well, no. I mean, I was just going to say that. You know, we obviously know that, you know, Connor, you know, where he looked the best, Aldo and Eddie Alvarez, is guys who gave him enough time to stand in that range and manipulate it, where he's a master. And I just don't think that Khabib's pace and pressure is going to allow that. I think that Connor's going to be having to make decisions all fight where he's not going to get time. And I think, look, can he catch him with a counter shot? Maybe. But I think my read here is I would go a little bit further than even early or late. I think if he doesn't spark him out, I think it's Khabib's fight.
Yeah, so I think we all agree with that. And the one caveat I'll add to that is that that's Khabib's style. It's usually Eddie Alvarez's style. But holy God.
He apologized to his coaches for not following game plan.
So, but I don't think Conor's in Khabib's head here. I just don't. But if he loses his game plan, we've seen what could happen. That being said, how do we approach this from DFS? Do we stack? Do you go all in on one side? What are you going to do? What are your strategies for this fight? Joe, how are you approaching it?
It's a stack in cash, as much as I hate to stack. I think it's a pretty clear stack in cash. In terms
Time. I have to stop you for a second because I'm usually on the side of stacking. I don't like the stack in this fight at all because I think if Connor wins, it's 105 quick knockout. If Khabib wins, 115-5, like you're going to get – I don't think you get even 10x out of a stack. I don't think you get 8x out of the stack.
Like,
Okay.
I do. I like it as a stack. I mean, in terms of GPPs – my strategy is likely going to be, I haven't looked at my numbers yet, but probably 6-3-1 or 5-4-1. You know, one meaning that, you know, like 10% fade of the main event, but 90%, you know, all in on the main event. So, you know, 5-4-1, 6-3-1, depending on how strongly you feel about the winner. That's how I would play it.
So, I mean, if you're playing GPPs, guys, you... For those new, sorry if you're, you know, a diehard and you're listening. I just want to explain this for everybody new we have listening. You should be playing multiple lineups in these tournaments. Throwing one bullet at them, it's a really hard way to win. You need your lineup to be different. This allows you to play both sides of the fight, get the winner in it, and build your best lineup around that. So Joe's saying about 5-5, you know, 6-4,
6-3 or 5-4. Always, I'm reserving one lineup for a main event fade.
Okay, which means because most people are going to roster the main event, that's why he's giving himself that edge if it doesn't end up in the best lineup.
Right.
Chris, how about for you?
Yeah, I like that. I would go along with Joe there. I like leaving one lineup for a total fade, although, you know, I think a stack could work here because I don't think it's spark out or spark out. I think if Khabib wins, you know, we could see that mauling grinding style that we've seen the past couple fights. I mean,
and Connor gets some significant strikes in.
Yeah, sure. Connor will get some blows in if that's the case. I mean, look, we saw him put up huge numbers against Barboza, huge numbers against Michael Johnson. I mean, I don't think that you know, and I think he can finish these guys. I don't think he likes to. So if you got a guy who's gonna just he did, but I mean, it was very late, and you know, he already had a billion points by that time, anyway. But yeah, so I'll go along with Joe here. If you're gonna play, if you're just playing a couple, I think Khabib's gonna win the fight, but it's hard to pass Connor at what is it, 76?
78.
I mean that's a hard pass. I don't know. I think it kind of reminds me of the Eddie Alvarez pricing. I think it was similar, where Connor was in the 7,000s, and it was just a gift for everybody who took him. I mean, don't forget how good Connor McGregor has been. But having said that, my pick is Skippy.
All right, this is your first time watching, listening. We do hot takes. These are takes that are hot. Obviously, don't go all in based on these picks. Some of the things you're about to hear are probably a little outrageous. They're for fun. We do hit them on occasion. Actually, we're probably like 50-50, which is
– I'm on a roll with my hot takes.
Which is kind of crazy considering what we do here. So Anybody got one locked and loaded hot take?
I do, but it's not a super hot take, but I am going to say Pettis brothers 0, opponents 2. So there will not be a Pettis brother who wins.
Man, I don't even know you anymore, Joe. Really?
Yeah, I mean, that's hot-esque. I guess
what the Pettis brothers fought on the same slate. They both lost as well. So I'm seeing a repeat. I'm seeing a repeat of that. Yeah, that's not super hot, but that's one I had locked and loaded. So, other than Tom Devinger.
Yeah, this is more of a loyalty play because the last time I hit a hot take, it was Anthony Pettis on a triangle armbar. So I'm gonna say, Tony Ferguson does the snap down city, yada yada yada. They get in the scramble. Pettis is on the bottom, throws up the triangle, it gets there. I can see it happening. So, you know, that's gonna be my loyalty hot take of the day.
Right. You guys just set up your hot take game. Ready? I'm gonna go nuts. Alon Patrick, 12 takedowns.
Ooh. That's the hottest of our hot takes for sure.
Scott,
we didn't even do that fight.
Yeah, I was going to say.
We totally skipped that fight.
Did we? It's my hot take?
Yeah, we skipped it, dude.
I missed it. Huh?
Let's do it real quick.
One thing
that Holtzman is good at is getting up after he's taken down, which bodes well for Patrick. I like Patrick. I think he's a sneaky GPP play. I think he'll be underowned. Holtzman is physical, ex-hockey player, good athlete. Patrick will have no problem taking him down and taking him down multiple times. I think 12 is ambitious, but I think he's a sneaky GPP play.
That's why it's a hot take, and I agree with that. Chris, anything to add to it?
Not really. Patrick is more athletic. Holtzman has a really bad striking game. He gets himself out of position a lot. So even a few counters wouldn't be out of the question. But essentially, yes, I like Patrick to take him down over and over and over again.
How'd we miss that? That's
I don't know.
It's good that you had it as a hot take, though. Because
my bad. Yep. Yeah.
Otherwise, you would have missed the fight.
All right, guys. That's it for Fight IQ. Go to rotowire.com/free. 10 days, no credit card required.
Is there a break?
All the paid content. I think our next event is – let me look it up.
27th, I think.
Is it right? Denver?
We have that long of a break?
I think so.
We do. We have 3 weeks off, so we'll see you guys in 3 weeks. Guys, keep on checking out. Hopefully you enjoy DraftKings MMA. If you're new, the regulars, we appreciate you guys. Thank you. Like, thumbs up, follow all of us on Twitter. If you're new and if you're old, regardless, enjoy Khabib Nurmagomedov and Conor McGregor. Assuming we get the fight, I am fingers crossed. Guys, anything to add before we head on out of here?
No, man, good luck. Lots of money to be won on DK. That with your head, not over it.
Exactly. Play within a bankroll, guys.
Above all, just enjoy, because it's just going to be a great night. So with all our lust for, you know, money, power, and women, don't forget to just be a fan every once in a while. This is a great card, a great fight to do it. So make sure that you take time to enjoy the fights.
Take care, guys. Good luck.
Peace out.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.